is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm joined with my co-host, Bahamian surgical oncologist and general surgeon Dr. Wesley Francis, and we're pleased again to have in the studio Dr. Ian Fernander, who is a lifestyle and livelihood coach. He's also a business development and operation consultant. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening, Bahamas.
So we're going to talk today. We have the wealth and business expert in our presence, so we're going to make full use of all of his knowledge. The health of the nation undoubtedly is the wealth of the nation, and vice versa. The wealth of the nation and the health of the nation are interchangeable. And a few inspirational quotes. Success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. True prosperity stems from mindset, consistency, and value creation rather than just accumulating money. Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune. If you're saving, you're succeeding. So I'll start with that, Dr. Fernanda. We are a country that nobody saves. If we look at the average Bahamian and how much he has for a rainy day, how much he has in his savings account, I know statistics usually say not even $700, not even $800. So even it doesn't even take a tragedy for someone to go into sudden, horrible financial hardship. And the stress of that, living on the edge, on the razor's edge continuously, just living day to day, week to week, month to month, not saving anything, not going anywhere. In fact, as we go on in life, usually going further and further in debt, and that includes persons with education, those who have good jobs. We don't have, we're not good in terms of our finances. Whatever we have, we waste. There's no savings. Can you speak a little bit of the lack of a saving mentality in our country and the detriment that it has on our future of our country?
Well, saving is a funny word. I think most of us see it as having a bit of money set aside somewhere that we can use, that we set aside. In our country, I don't know if it's our culture more than the practicality of being in the Bahamas, where you are more on the precipice of having not ever having enough money to live a fairly decent lifestyle, the way we have defined lifestyle. So we've defined lifestyle in more highfalutin terms than a good number of countries have. So a typical Bahamian is striving to have a car, so striving to have their own house, striving to have nice pairs of shoes and clothes, and very materialistically minded. And of course, on top of that, to be human, you've got to eat. You have to move about, and there's some things that you must do just to exist. And the cost of those things in the Bahamas really put a lot of pressure on even people who are making a lot of money to not be able to save. There's also a mentality that does not equip us to think about how do we build wealth, which is really what I would like to talk about. because saving does not guarantee wealth at all.
Absolutely, especially in this environment, right? I mean, our banks are so liquid. You have, if it is that you look at savings in terms of how much money you have in the bank, then you know that money doesn't work for you. So if you're thinking about building wealth, and I really am happy that we can get into this conversation because I think people need to be aware of that. I know what you mentioned earlier, Greg. It's about not having at all, right?
A rainy rather day than, fund.
Right, a rainy day fund. Okay. Right, I understand that. But I think we could. I mean, that's something that you wouldn't want. Everybody should have some sort of a rainy day fund, some sort of security, emergency funds, and you could tell us. I mean, because there's usually some multiple that you could say of what your salary would be to keep in a rainy day fund. But keeping all your money in the bank just to look at it sometimes, it's not always a good thing. Because if you want to grow wealth, and I'm sure you're going to get into this, the money has to work for you.
Yes. Right? Well, about the rainy day fund, I think one rule of thumb you can look at is that you want to have enough resources to continue your lifestyle in comfort for another 6 months or so should you lose contact with livelihood. And so that's one of the things you want to try to build towards. That's a nice, ambitious goal for everybody, no matter what your situation
is. But in terms of percentages, would you say across the board, no matter what you're making, try and save 20%?
Well, I don't like percentages. I do like what I just said. You start off by, I would advise people, you start off by figuring out what, let me give a definition of wealth. The ability, the capacity to be your best self. Having the resources and the facility to be content with your life. And if you say that's wealth, then one of the things I think you start off with is making an assessment of what is my lifestyle? What is that life that I feel is ideal to live that I am content with? And then you say, what does that cost? And then you say, how do I resource that lifestyle, whatever that is? And once you can somehow, if you can, find the resources to meet the lifestyle that you have determined is the lifestyle for you, then you are pretty much wealthy. The trick is that many people are being driven by how much money they make as opposed to how they can use money, which is only one resource, to suit their lifestyle. What they're doing is they're using money and saying, I have this amount of money. I'm going to try to live a life that money makes me live, as opposed to determining what is the life of content that I need to have, and then how do I resource this? What are the resources that I need to find to give myself this lifestyle?
And I think that's an important point when we regards to contentment, finding something that you love to do. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a large disposable income or that you have a large amount in the bank. I'll go to you, Dr. Francis. When we were in surgical residency, we were on the brink of poverty all the time, but we were content because we were helping people. We were doing what we thought we were put on earth to do. It was extreme. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Maybe you was content. I was working hard. Yeah. But I don't know about that.
We saw that we were fulfilled and that we were doing something that very few people afford.
Yeah. Surgical residency was modern day slavery.
It is.
Day slavery. That's what it was. But you do it because you know that you're gaining skills that will one day give you opportunity, and also the skills to help people. But understand, it was not a good time.
Yes.
I was in Detroit.
Yes.
In that cold weather and winter, going to work at 3 o'clock in the morning, in the snow, sliding on those, you know, black ice and all of that. That was a miserable time. So let's qualify that. But it was great. I mean, yeah. We learned a whole lot, and you had to, from that, you learned to be resilient. You learned to understand that you had to work hard. We didn't have an opportunity to increase our income, right? Because it was a fixed salary, and you didn't have the time to go anywhere else or work and do anything else. And I think a lot of people go through those periods in their lives, but it wasn't fun.
Well, I think sometimes you got to go through hell.
You got to go through hell. Yeah.
To appreciate heaven.
Yeah. And that was our times. Hell.
I'll give an example. I remember in some clinic days when I was in residency, I'd have to go there for 5:30 in the morning and see 160 patients and not finish till 8:30. And you don't even have time for lunch. You're just seeing patients constantly. So now when someone asks me, how can I see 50 patients in a day here? I said, that's nothing compared to what I'm used to. I mean, and I'm getting a little something for doing it. Right. Then I was doing it for free. But it was a pleasure and learning something, and that I knew that one day I would bring back that skill to the Bahamas.
But you were learning and gaining the ability to one day hopefully earn.
Correct.
And through what you do.
There's one thing that you said, Dr. Fernanda. You said you want part of wealth and success is to be able to have 6 months aside, whatever means that is, or maybe it's multiple streams of income that maybe you stop your main draw, but other streams of income or I will say side hustles, but I'm talking about legitimate ways of making other ways of money. But the typical Bahamian lives way beyond their means. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about that 6 months, you have to talk about what is involved in that 6 months. If someone's living way beyond that means, that 6 months is very difficult to be
very
able
difficult.
To.
Yeah. Very difficult. And that's the challenge. A lot of us are not aware of really going back to my premise. A lot of us not aware of what is a life of contentment for me? What is that? Mm-hmm. We have switched it around to say I need $1 million to be happy, as opposed to figuring out what are the things that make me happy. Yeah. And once I could facilitate those things, then what are those things going to cost me? And how do I maintain that level of happiness and contentment? So if you start by thinking away from money and seeing money only as a resource and not life itself. A lot of us are convinced that money is life itself. So you have young guys starting off, sitting down saying, well, I am not going to take that job because it's not paying me $100,000 a year. I'd rather sit under a tree. And so what they're not realizing is that they've adopted a lifestyle sitting under a tree that really does not need a lot of resources. And so they flipped it on its head. Whereas if they had said, my lifestyle is going to be this and this, they'd be driven to find a way to accommodate their lifestyle with the way they live, what they learn, what skills they acquire, how they commit to their families. And I have another thing that I've written down in terms of wealth, and I've written down it's a commitment to live a lifestyle where you can contribute to your well-being, the well-being of your family, the well-being of your communities, that could be your neighborhood, your church, or whatever, the well-being of your country, and the well-being of the world. And if you start off with this commitment, you'd be surprised to know how that can drive you to think, hey, I've got to use my time better. I have to learn better. I have to have a better character. I have to have better discipline. And I haven't mentioned education because if you go back to the days of our forefathers, people don't remember this, but a lot of those men did not go to school. I can think of Myla Butler, did not go to college. Let me see someone who's alive. Arthur Folks, did not go to college. Sarah Stephen, none of the founders of the first party went to college. But many of the men in those days were vibrant, incredibly knowledgeable, incredibly intelligent,
industrious.
Incredibly industrious men who were wealthy and did well because they were driven by purpose and commitment and character and a lot of things that we have divorced ourselves from in the pursuit of money. Right. We think money replaces these things, and if you can get your hands on some money, you're straight. So we have guys who are willing to be drug dealers where you don't need character, you don't need a commitment to community, you could destroy a community, and on and on and on, because they think the only thing they need is money, and money is a very small component of wealth.
But you have to look at the mentality of our society as well. A typical teenager, someone in their late 20s as a male, the society is dictating that if you want to have a young lady drawn to you, you have to have the fancy watch, you have to have the fancy car, you have to take them out to this fancy restaurant, you got to take them to shopping trips in Miami, you got to pay for their hair to be done. And then the women in turn are taught that, you know what, you only entertain men who can provide this, has a certain car, lives in a certain neighborhood, has a certain education. It's a self-destruction that is happening within our society, where just in terms of, for a young man, a lot of things, the most important thing is, you know what, they want the best woman on their arm. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, more than one on their arm. And how do they get that? By getting money. And how do they get that? No matter how they get it, legally or illegally, they need to get it quickly. And they want to, and it goes quickly because these women will take it from them.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that we are not focusing enough on flipping the script back to what it was, where a man was a person of character, mm-hmm. a person of ambition, a person who contributed whatever he had to his family and his community, a man who was faithful and diligent and dedicated. I mean, those were the definition of men. And if you couldn't do that, people didn't think too much of you. So we've migrated or we've done some metamorphosis into this place where now a man is a money bag,
right?
And that's unfortunate.
And it's important to have mentors such as yourself, financial mm-hmm. gurus, that, and even Dr. Francis mm-hmm. and I. If we were to speak to our younger selves, our whole mindset, I'm sure, has changed over the years.
Absolutely.
I mean, years ago, we would say, oh, I would wish I could have the money to buy this and buy that. Now, I'll go to the mall and I might have the finances to buy whatever I want. I have no interest in buying it because it doesn't, it has no importance to me anymore. They're more important things, spending time with family, enjoying myself, relaxing, et cetera, seeing the world. That's more important to me than the materialism, because you're born naked in this world yep. and you leave naked.
Yeah.
And it's more important. I'll quote.
And you were actually naked under your clothes.
Yes, yes. I'll quote one of my mentors, Dr. Dane Bowe, a well-known orthopedic surgeon. He says, the most important thing in life is your reputation. It's more important than all the riches in the world.
Yes.
And you can only do, if you concentrate on that, that itself can make you a wealthy individual. Because on your deathbed, you're not going to think about how many sweethearts you had. You're not going to think about
how much money you have,
how many houses you have. You're going to think about the time you had with your family. You're going to think about your legacy, the children that you have. Did you leave a legacy for them, empower them to be better members of society than that you were? That's the most important thing. You don't care about the materialism, but for most young men, we're here trying to advocate success for men, of course women as well. Women are doing so well. We're trying to uplift and save men in this country and boys who are in crisis. But the problem is that too many of them are focused only on what is for show. Mm-hmm. There's too much in the way of black crab syndrome, too much in the way of jealousy. That's why we have such a violent, crime-ridden society, because they'll, if you you can't get it yourself, you're going to take it from somebody else, and they see no problem with that.
Yeah. I'm happy that you mentioned death, because one thing that is lost on a lot of our young men and men in general is that, to be honest, pretty much the major resource that we have as human beings is time. It's not money.
That
it's time.
True.
Time is not just such a major resource. It is finite. You could have $100 million of and count, but you got a finite amount of time. And if you can switch your brain into saying, well, hey, this is my wealth, time. How do I use this to be happy? How do I use time well? But we're not taught that time is that important.
I mean, look at from my own experience, and I'm mm-hmm. sure with you, Dr. France, I'll pose a question. The most important time that you have would be with your kids when they come home from college, or time you spend with your wife. Far more than making
Absolutely.
Money, doing this surgery and that surgery, and buying this property and starting this business. The most important thing in terms of time, and I would say the time you spend with your family and your loved ones is
right.
the greatest wealth that you have.
You can't ever get it back, you know. I have three kids, and they're all off now. And, you know, when I think back about them, I think about the times when I used to do the school drop-offs. And, you know, in our family, I did all of the school drop-offs. And I'm so grateful for the time that we spent during that time, the conversations that we had. And that really was the time that I had spending with them. Because, I mean, other times I was working a lot. But now that they're gone, I don't have to do the school drop-offs no more. But I missed that school drop-offs, to be honest. Because that was the time that I got to know all of my children. Right, because we in the car we spoke a lot. I got into their lives. They asked me questions that some was tough. I had to answer. We often laughed about, you know, Guardian Radio. We you know, about all the things that would go on in the morning. And those are the things that I reflect on. And those are the happy moments. And true, it was the time, and time can be invested. You can lose time, but you can still invest time and reap the rewards of it later. And the reaping or the rewards you got is the relationship that you have with the people in your life.
So the most valuable thing in your life is your family and the love you share with them, obviously.
Absolutely.
But when you're 18 and 20, the most important thing to you, I'm sure, was getting a Mercedes-Benz, living in a gated community, buying those Gucci shoes. And that's the same for so many people at that age. And we need to stop that mentality. Even the most educated of us, when we go off to university in the U.S., Canada,
yeah.
you'll see, even when you're going through orientation, because of the capitalist system there, you have all these booths. Come, get a credit card. Get this credit card. And all you do is, and you have no source of income, all you're doing is going into debt where you got to pay 21% interest, 23% interest. Let's talk a little bit about the overwhelming debt that an average Bahamian has to contend with. They're in a hole, and the hole keeps getting deeper and deeper. They're, by the time their salary has all the deductions and the loan payments and everything else, maybe 20% is left, 25% is left.
Yeah, debt is really the Satan of financial existence. And part of it is because when you owe someone anything, they own you. And human beings don't do well when they're owned. You lose a part of your humanity. You lose things that you need in order to succeed. And we've gone into this realm where people are content to owe others or be owned by others. I like to put it that way, because when you owe somebody, they own you. When you owe for that Mercedes, the bank owns the Mercedes. When you owe someone for a vacation that you took, the whoever you owe owns your vacation. And some people have gotten to the level with the clothes they're wearing, the vacation they take, the experiences they have in life belong to other people because they owe those people.
But you know, there's good debt and bad debt. And I think what you're speaking about is really bad debt.
Bad debt.
Consumer debt. I mean, you know, debt to go on a vacation, to buy a car. That's really, really bad debt. But there's good debt and debt which allows you to grow.
Is a part of wealth building.
And which is a part of it. And sometimes, I mean, a lot of companies can't really, generate significant cash flow and growth without debt.
Almost 100% of them.
Right. I think we ought to distinguish or differentiate good debt from bad debt.
I agree. And if you're a person, you mention a business, and you start to see your life as a business. Right. And one of the things that help people to see their life as a business is if they have things to care about. If you've got family to care about, even if you care about yourself enough, and you see yourself as a business, as you know what? If I'm going to acquire funds from someone and owe them, I'm going to have to make good with these funds so that they actually help me to develop in a way that I am wealthier. But we don't have that mindset. We are sliding the credit card pretty much 100% of the times for things that will not help us to be better people.
We have to look at the cost of doing business in this country, and it has to do with with crime. I'm blessed to have a large volume of patients across all sectors, but I can look specifically at persons who own gas stations, for example. I look at how many of them I've had conversations with over the many years I've gotten to know them as a patient and as a friend, and it's not a question of were they ever held up in a robbery, it's how many times. Mm-hmm. And maybe a quarter of them have been shot and are lucky to be alive. So that's the cost of doing business in this country, mm-hmm. where there's so much hatred. Yeah. You talk about black crowd syndrome, but if you have any success, you become a target. Yeah. And that's why it's always important that you don't have to be ostentatious. Sometimes the quiet success is the most important success. You don't need to show off to anyone. You don't have to prove anything to anybody. If you're trying to attract women based on materialism, that's the wrong woman that you're going to want to have in your life. That's not your life partner, because if things go wrong, not every business is going to be successful. Yeah. You're going to fall down. You got to pick yourself up. You got to fall down again. Sometimes businesses, you might not see any fruits of your labor for 6-8 years.
Yeah, that's common. That's common.
Very common. But if you have a woman who's going to be with you through thick and thin, that's not a woman who wants the materialism and wants to be with you because she gets $2,000 for a clothing allowance in her hair every month. That's the wrong type of woman that you want to be with. But it's very difficult for someone to be successful in this country and not become a target. And that's a broader issue in terms of the crime-ridden mentality in this country.
And the crime goes deeper than being held up by gunpoint.
Stealing.
There's the crime of theft that is so rampant, where persons have a disrespect for other people's things. So even staff on jobs are taking things. Customers are taking things. You have staff who are robbing their workplace because they're supposed to be working for 8 hours. They may put in an hour and they on the phone for the rest or doing something else. And this is pervasive throughout. And all of this is crime. But we somehow have not defined stealing by means of not putting in a full day's work as a crime. So you go into organizations, whether it be hospitals, banks, whatever, and you have a percentage of staff members, maybe 10 to 20% of them, that are doing 80% of the work. But that institution is paying everybody.
Yeah.
Well, let me talk about it just in terms of healthcare, and Dr. Francis. When we talk about government employees and being in a hard day's work for an honest day's pay, the most dedicated persons in the government system, obviously we honor the police officers, we honor the Defense Force officers, are those in the front line, in particular the healthcare system or the foundation health, the nurses, for example. So they have untold hardship. They're not paid what they should be paid. They encounter abuse from patients. They encounter abuse from family of patients. They lack equipment, supplies, support, et cetera, and they still bear with it and try to do the best. And many times they get knocks in the public eye all the time. PMH is this. The nurses didn't do that. The nurses are greedy. The nurses are whatever. It's very difficult. So even those who are dedicated, and you have to be dedicated and selfless as an individual to be a nurse.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of healthcare, at least frontline, patient-facing healthcare workers, certainly within them, there is a level of greater good when they execute their job. A lot of them went into it because they want to make a difference. And yes, as you said before, sometimes the compensation is not there. But it is that they still turn up and then they still do the work. And, you know, we talk about a healthcare system, particularly a public healthcare system, and I'm very passionate about it. We hear a lot of bad things coming out of the system, but there's a lot more good in that system. But we don't ever hear about it. We only hear about the one or two bad things. I mean, sometimes we need to hear more of the good things that happen. You think about it. Let's say even if 10% of things go bad in our public health system, and believe you me, it goes bad everywhere, even in Cleveland Clinic or those other places that people hold in high regard. Almost 80 to 90% of good actually happens. And people don't appreciate how much our public healthcare system is actually a safety net for a lot of people who cannot afford to go elsewhere or to do. And those people get taken care of. Yeah, sometimes it's under-resourced. And whenever you have a mismatch of resources, you get a line. So yeah, you're going to wait a little longer, but you still will get those resources. Okay? And so I think, you know, we have to applaud patient-facing healthcare workers who actually come every day and do their best, and sometimes facing criticism, and nowadays it's getting even more difficult to even just do their work because sometimes relatives are just so toxic now. The environment is getting extremely toxic in our health system because people you they come there. And it's almost as if they want to fight with the people, which is bad.
And then okay? We're surgeons, and we just look at it from the perspective of surgeons. The murder rate this year or last year was one of the lowest in a long time, well over 100, under 100. I don't remember the last time that happened. Maybe during COVID, during lockdown in 2021, might have been lower, but a lot of that is due to the wonders that are being done PMH, where many of us trained in cities that were overrun with crime and gunshot and stab wounds, and we came back with skills that are precious beyond words. If it wasn't for the excellence of the emergency room department, of the nurses at Princess Margaret Hospital on the front line, the persons in ICU, the theater staff, and the surgeons who come out in the middle of the night at their own peril, because when you talk about persons on crime spree and shooting up this one and that, when you go out of your house at 3 o'clock in the morning, those same persons are still looking for someone else to rob and shoot. The same people who got shot, and many of them are criminals and we're trying to save, when they're threatening you if you don't save them. So the PMH has saved many, many persons.
Yep.
Absolutely. And the murder rate is as low as it is because we don't talk about the hundreds of people that we save that would have died, absolutely, even in the best institutions around the world. So absolutely, in terms of trauma, PMH has excellence, and no one speaks about that. We'll talk a little bit more about health and wealth and wealth and health with Dr. Ian Fernander and Dr. Wesley Francis. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, the Urologist Speaks.
Gardens presents JITG Music Fest. Janae Aiko, Ludacris, Ashanti, Nelly, Glorilla, LMA, Maya, Show, Nice and Friends, featuring SWV, Donnell Jones, Case, Sunshine Anderson, and Kenny Burns, Isley Brothers, L. DeBarge, Stephanie Mills, and so many more. March 7th and 8th, Hard Rock Stadium. Tickets and info at jazzinthegardens.com. Jazzinthegardens.com.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody calling me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 308-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, Dr. Wesley Francis, and our guest today is Dr. Ian Fernander, who is a lifestyle and livelihood coach. We're talking about finances, and we're talking about wealth and health and the importance. They're interchangeable in terms of the importance in our society. So we were talking about what is our definition of wealth, and obviously that will differ from individual to individual. But we want to talk a little bit more in terms of what are the strategies for achieving wealth, Dr. Ian Fernander, and how does a young man, even a boy, equip himself for walking the path to wealth, and what are some of the main resources required for success?
Yes, very good question. And you start off with a lot of tools that we're sort of sidestepping. You need to have some ambition for something greater than mm-hmm. yourself. You start with that, and you need to equip yourself with character that is steady enough to work towards whatever your ambitions are. You got to have the discipline, the dedication. To pursue what you need to pursue. And some of these pursuits are really pursuing a sense of self-knowledge. Who am I? What am I really good at? A lot of our failures today, I talk to young men all the time and says, well, I did not get a single GCE. So and they're convinced that because they didn't get a single GCE, they have nothing to contribute to society. And then you get them in the conversation, so what are you good at? What do you like to do? And you find out that this guy loves to paint or some other thing that he really has a passion for. And says, you know, you can make as much as a doctor painting.
More.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But no one has framed his life in that way. What they've said to him is that if you don't pass your BJCs and your GCs, then you're done. And so we need to sort of reframe the thing into, you need to have character, you need to have a knowledge of self, and then you need to have a knowledge of the field that you're in. That's some of the strategies you need to have in place. But you got to start with having a place to go, believing that there you can be better than you are. And if you don't believe that, then you're going to have a challenge.
Yeah, so education is a stepping stone. It's not the be-end and end-all of everything else. Some of the most successful persons, and I know persons from all corners of the society, are plumbers, master plumbers, carpenters, men who do drywalling, and they do it with precision and honesty and reliability, and they do far better than most lawyers, doctors, accountants, or engineers. Contractors who are honest and reliable and do excellent work are very successful. It doesn't mean that they were necessarily successful in terms of being in school and in academics or going off to university. And even the most brilliant of our young men and women, young teenagers in our society, what they aspire to is in many times wrong. We've discussed this before, Dr. Francis. They want to go off to Ivy League school where they don't understand the tuition is $50,000, $60,000 a year. And at the end of the day, their degree is really no more valuable than if they got a solid foundation at a smaller school in US or Canada or went to the University of the Bahamas. They think it's all about name. Who are you going to impress? One of my best friends growing up, he has a master's in nuclear physics from MIT. He has an MBA from Wharton School of Business. And he struggles. Yes. He struggles. And sometimes he doesn't make it. His business is not doing well. I also have friends who, you mentioned no GCs, have no GCs, and they have five thriving businesses because they stick to the grind. They didn't always succeed. They picked themselves up. They had a great idea. They went with it. That might have failed, and they went and had another idea. So success, once you reach at a certain level, you're not going to ask, where did you go to university? Where did you go to school? Where's your degree from? That was just a step along a long ladder. Even for us, Dr. Francis, some of the most successful physicians are those who have a good bedside manner, who have a spirituality about them, who patients feel confident that they actually care about. I've seen some brilliant on paper physicians, surgeons, who don't do well because of their arrogance.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Because they have horrible bedside manner, because they look down on patients, because they don't spend the time with their patients, where they see a patient as a disease, not knowing that patient's name, knowing that patient has a grandson off at school, knows that their wife had a health issue 3 months ago, that they just got a promotion at work, not getting to know the person as a whole and what they might be going through. So when we talk about health and wealth, if you're stressed all the time about where you're going to, how you're going to pay the mortgage, how you're going to pay that school tuition, when you have sleepless nights where you don't have time to exercise because you got to work two jobs, where every day is a rat race, and it's a rat race for so many Bahamians, just the stress alone of fighting through traffic where people drive recklessly with no regard for human life whatsoever, and you have your children in your back seat to try to get them to school on time, is an ordeal in itself. And then it's the same thing when you try to go pick them up at the end of the day. It's a very stressful ordeal. Then in between then, you're trying to make a living so that you can provide for your family. If you're up all night thinking about where you're going to pay that next bill, your children are sheltered from that stress. You take on all that stress yourself. And for many in this society, it's a single woman, a single mother, who's doing it alone, which just magnifies it tenfold. Yeah.
You know, good health leads to higher productivity. And I mean, having a means of productivity, and that's where some level of education, and we're not talking formal education, you don't have to go to university. You can have some education in terms of a skill. You have to be able to solve people's problems, and that's what really business is about, solving people's problems. Sure. And then people are willing to pay for a product or a service if it solves their issues. Yeah. And so when you have good health, it leads to higher productivity, consistent work attendance, right? You can work more, and then you make better financial decisions with that. And in turn, generate more wealth. If you have low health now, then even if you have money, you can't enjoy that, right? So interdependence between health and wealth.
Well,
and that's important.
Let me bring up, it might be a bit of a controversial topic to you two gentlemen in terms of our society and the belief that, you have to pay your tithes, where 10% of whatever you make, you got to give to whatever church leader or to your church, whatever. And some of those, unfortunately, it's men are capable of all manners of evil. Some of those pastors are very unscrupulous. If why are you giving? If you're struggling to put food on the table, why are you giving 10% of what little you make to a pastor who's essentially driving a Bentley and has six sweethearts openly in the church? Obviously, if you have the ability to help, give to a church that's helping the community, helping its members, I'm all for that. But if you're struggling, maybe take that 10% and put it aside for your children's education.
So you're touching on a very important facet of wealth building, which is prioritizing your resources.
And, but for those in our society who are taught that you have to
pay to get into heaven. Yeah, the first thing you do, which is priority one, is to give that money to the church. So you have some people who have, for whatever good reason or maybe not so good reason, are prioritizing expenditures that put them at peril. So they are prioritizing putting the money into the church, putting the money into the numbers houses, into the sweetheart, into the going out on Fridays with the boys or the girls. Yeah. These things become priority. Then the things that they need to just survive, a roof over the head, they can't pay the rent. These same people.
Yes. Well, let me just bring up a point. If we were to do away with sweethearting, don't you think that the average man would have such a overwhelming amount of disposable income?
Yeah, if we do away with alcohol, we'll have a whole lot of vices.
Exactly. I don't want to put giving tithes as a vice. But certainly.
But if you can't afford it,
I would say
God will understand that you should take care of your child.
You have to prioritize your resources, yeah, or you will get in trouble.
I think it's important to understand what the purpose of tithing is, right? Where its origin, and it has to do, you know, with the 12 tribes, and there was the Levites. They were basically the priest. They didn't work. They did nothing. Their work was to serve the community. And because they didn't work, they didn't have other means of productivity. The rest of the 11 tribes had to give to support them.
Yeah.
That's where it really started. So there's some meaningfulness in that.
Well, Russ, I'm going to put it differently, they did work. They contributed to the well-being of the society.
Exactly.
They gave up their entire time.
That was it.
their entire existence to make other people's lives better.
Absolutely.
So the trade-off was that these people who were living better lives, being able to produce more and get more done, says, you know, these guys who are helping me be a better person.
Be a better person, right.
who are coming in when I'm sick and doing all these good things to make me a human being. They don't have to.
And so
it's a trade.
It's a trade-off, right. And that's,
but
that's
I don't know if a lot of that is happening in some of our spiritual contexts, where the collection from the persons in the pew are being traded off by a kind of high level of service beyond the sermon, because the Levites weren't preachers; they served their community.
They serve their community, and that's
a part of what's missing. There some people who their only benefit is that they get to sit and hear someone talk at them.
But there are hundreds, of single mothers out there who half the time the light is cut off because of non-payment. They're going to bed hungry because they want to feed their children first. Their son has holes in their school shoes because they can't afford to be, but they're going to make the priority one, that 10%, that pastor who might not be honorable just because he calls himself pastor and is living the high life. Yeah.
Well,
that's wrong.
Whichever pastor is that, he has to give an account, right, at some point in life, right? But you also have to appreciate that the person who is giving also feel like they have to give an account themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of their worship.
It's a part of their worship.
Right. So you have to, it's the whole tithing thing is a little more complex, to be fair, there are
some systems that are supporting communities.
Yes.
Not all of them, but
exactly.
Some of them.
No, there's good and bad in everything. And I'm sure that there are certain churches and that are doing wonderful things with the tithes.
And
but if someone is paying tithes, they should be able to afford to be without that 10%. We have a call coming in. Sorry for the wait. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Pinto and Dr. Francis.
You got it right.
You got it right this time. Wow.
there's somebody else in there.
Dr. Ian Fernando.
Yeah.
All right. Good night. Yeah, you know, I think Dr. Francis said something very interesting, and it's amazing how human brains work. Just before he said the word alcohol, that is exactly what I wanted to talk about as relates to health, right? And so next week, Dr. Pinto, I really would love for you to do a show juxtaposing alcohol and the effects on the metabolic events as relates to the anti-diuretic hormone, right?
Yeah.
We had a show on alcohol before, but yes, that's a great idea.
But the proliferation thereof within the city. And so from my perspective, there's two things I wanted to get at, something from last week. I noticed that since I even used to drink beers, like maybe a beer or half a beer after I finished work, and maybe a half a Guinness. I learned to control it. And so even sometimes if I drink a whole one, but what I noticed in the night, it really would affect the urination. Yes. And then I really started to do the research on it. And so it also inflames the prostate. That's another thing. And then I just wanted to juxtapose the spiritual context of what you guys are talking about in the fact that we have been fed a narrative in which it is said that money solves all things, which is a false narrative.
Absolutely.
And so when we look at humanity, if you, me, or anybody, if we withdraw ourselves from our jobs and we sit and we meditate somewhere out in nature, maybe a lot of people would find themselves and become themselves versus just keep going and going and going and going. And so most of us can't find ourselves in the sense that we attach ourselves to our jobs and we have to come out of that for the humanity to come back in us. Because what I wanted to say was, as the type of TERP surgery that I went through, I'm digressing now. The painkillers, Dr. Pinto, didn't work at all. And the pain, when I first urinated, because of the type of TERP that you said is outdated, right, that you have some other, but seals the blood vessel, et cetera, the pain was unbearable when I urinated. And it just was trying to share that. So other people are going through it. It was unbearable. The painkillers did nothing for me. At the time, smoking cannabis did better for me. And I was just trying to find it. I mean, you know, pain brings us down. It makes us remember God. It makes us do a lot of things. And so most people wouldn't even acknowledge the things that they're doing. But if we allow the proliferation of liquor stores within the inner city, and then we turn around and we look at the healthcare system. So what I'm saying is I know you did a show on it, because I mean, I think I caught, but if you rehash that, and you could save a lot of lives.
Because alcohol does a lot of damage.
It really does. And then it's a psychological damage, and it all juxtaposes the driving in traffic and being silly and belligerent, and there's a culture of disrespect that's going on. I just think I'm going to finish this one, but I just thought I would mention that. Not to mention cigarettes.
Yes.
I have become, I really just get angry when I smell cigarette smoke, and it actually activates my sinus. Even though I smoke herb, it activates my sinus. So I know cigarette is the worst smoke, but the government allow it. They allow alcohol, but these things are worse, and they're causing more detrimental effects, really, on the human body, but nobody's saying anything. So I juxtapose this with capitalism and false advertising. So serving the community, we must serve our community in truth. We must not conform to capitalistic and status quo ideals and narratives. Have a good night.
Oh, thank you for your points. And it's a vicious cycle, because when you're coming home and having those 2-3 beers every night after work, who's watching you do that? It's your 6-year-old, it's your 9-year-old, and they're going to think that that's the way of being a man.
It's normalizing behavior.
It's normalizing behavior, and that is causing the degradation of our society on so many different levels. We talk about witnessing abuse, witnessing sweetheart. It just perpetuates itself, living beyond your means, emphasizing materialism, How can we overcome that, Dr. Fernandon, where a typical mother is teaching their daughter or a typical grandmother is teaching their granddaughter, you need to get as much money from that man as possible. You need to get one man to pay your light bill. You need to get one man to pay your car bill. You need to get one man to finance you doing this. And that is seen as a success in life when you have multiple men, not to mean that in some way they're prostituting their own daughter and having that mentality of being a prostitute for materialism.
Fortunately, that's not happening everywhere.
It's far too common.
And hopefully,
it's far too common.
Hopefully, it's something that where it happens, we go back to, again, thinking of what true wealth is. And if we can get away from the idea that wealth is money,
right,
and get to the idea that money is a byproduct of wealth. Money is a byproduct of living a wealthy, healthy life. If you live a wealthy life, one of conviction and purpose and discipline and character and giving and all of these things, that you normally get taken care of, like the Levites. Right. If you take care of everything that needs to be taken care of, you normally get taken care of. But if you pursue money for the sake of it, you can end up doing some stuff. For instance, I give an example of talking to any number of young men. When you sit them down and analyze the percentages of their spending, you find out that some of them may be spending some, you talk about the 10% of the church, they could be spending 20% of their income on alcohol alone. And when you show it to them, they're like, what? I spend, yeah, you're spending $1 out of every $5 that you make for the year.
And after payday, most men are binge drinking that weekend because they have money in their pocket.
And so we were talking about alcohol affecting health. It in this country, I find it's also affecting wealth as well. Because many persons, it affects their ambition, because now they think the pinnacle of life is just getting smashed and you know, hanging out with the guys.
And then you make the bad decisions. Yeah. You drive without a seatbelt 2 a.m. and you go and crash into a lamppost. You are putting yourself in peril when you're going out on a date and using alcohol irresponsibly as a woman.
It's not only you you're putting in peril. You're putting others.
Others in peril. The society as a whole.
They end up hitting somebody else.
Yeah. Right? We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Am I on?
You are. Go ahead, sir.
Dr. Pinto, Dr. Fernandez. Am I right about that?
Correct. Yeah. And Dr. Francis.
Yeah. And Dr. Francis. I'm enjoying the conversation tonight.
Appreciate it.
Can we just clear up one thing, though? If you would allow me to revert back to the tithing thing that we were talking about a couple of seconds ago.
Please go ahead.
Is it safe to say then, irregardless of what the leader is doing, once we tithe with a good heart, God still has an obligation to us?
I mean, everybody has their opinion, but my opinion is if you can't keep the lights on, you're going to bed hungry, your children don't have proper clothes to wear, I think that should be the priority.
I support your view there, caller. Because again, that's your worship, and I think your worship with God is personal. And if you believe that this is what you do to honor your God and honor obeying His commands, then for you, that's important.
Well, you can honor God in other ways. You can give your time. You can volunteer. You can mentor. You can.
It's personal.
I understand. Everybody. That's why we have a democratic society. Everybody has their viewpoint. Yes, I'll hear you.
Let's finish the call up.
I'll call you back, Doc. Thank you.
No, go back. I want to hear you say.
He's gone.
He's gone. Where'd he go?
No, he's here.
He's still here.
And I have a third view. You know?
No, he went.
I have a third view. Not that it's a different view, and it's that when you have the health and strength to earn, you are blessed by prioritizing giving back, not paying, which is unfortunately for some persons who are tithing, they see it as a payment. And I say to people, whether you go to church, whether you believe in whatever you believe in, you should prioritize in your life giving back of what you have been given.
Yeah, and it's a principle.
And Dr. Pinto mentioned it doesn't necessarily have to be, but the thing, the discipline of taking some amount, and some people I say to them, look, even if it's a dollar, you make a discipline out of saying, I have been blessed with another day of life. Right. I've been blessed with time. I've been blessed with, so let me give something back to this community that has contributed to my blessing.
Can I have a counter argument? You're giving 10% of the money that you cannot spare, and then you go to social services to have your child get school uniform. You're going to the government to have money to buy food to put on the plate. You're going to social services to help with pay for the rent. You're burdening society, and the money, the government doesn't have a kitty that's unending. Yeah, it comes from taxes.
They're actually collecting money from you.
Exactly. So you're becoming a burden to society.
That's a tax. Yes. A taxation right there. But I mean, notwithstanding all that's been said, the church has a responsibility to provide for those people also.
Yes.
Right?
And what if you're in a church that doesn't do that?
Well, then maybe you need to be in a different church.
I agree with that.
Okay? Yes. But the point of the matter is and church is really community. And it's a community that's, you know, has a belief that is common among them and a belief that God is sovereign. And a certain behavior and the way they conduct themselves. And a lot of charity should come out of church. So if you have someone who is destitute like that, like what you describe, the church is supposed to be there to support that person.
Even if they're not paying tithes.
even if they're not. But if they are, you know, and I often believe that's not really the role of government. Right? But I mean, people may disagree with me with that. But then that's the role of community.
I agree. But let's just change the subject. It's a controversial one, and I guess there's no right or wrong. We always talk about the ease of doing business in this country. The frustration, it's almost as if there are obstacles and barricades put up purposely, as if why are there so many haters out there? If we have more successful entrepreneurs, more successful business persons, our society as a whole will flourish. The economy will expand. There'll be different streams of income. We won't just be relying on tourism solely. There's so many other avenues and industries that we haven't even touched and we can, from technology to AI to, there's so many other ways that we can expand in our society. But just to get started, as we mentioned before, you can't even open up a bank account without the most frustrating ordeal on earth. We need to make it easier for someone to pave the way to success. And the only way to do that is to change and get rid of all this bureaucracy and red tape.
What's interesting, I grew up in Coconut Grove. And back in the day, what is interesting is that pretty much anyone who wanted to do anything could just go and do that.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to sell fish, you just got up and sold fish. If you wanted to sell cup from your house or salty sausage or whatever, and you wanted to be a dressmaker, you sewed in your house. And nowadays, if you want to do any business venture, you got to get a license, and your location can't be the house. You got to have a building and so forth and so on. So we've actually moved away from the age of entrepreneurship, where by and large many Bahamians weren't working in banks, weren't working in office buildings, because that was not the age of that being even available to Bahamians. But many persons were entrepreneurs, but they didn't have hurdles to go through in order to just get going.
Those hurdles came about for a reason. And a lot of those hurdles came about because people took advantage of the other people, right? And then regulators thought it best to put some sort of, you know, not necessarily to be a hurdle, but a protection to protect consumers. And yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. But there's a reason for it, right? We can make it easier. We can certainly make it easier. But you can go and have no regulations and no sort of restrictions at all, because then, you know, if it is that you, back in the day, you could make baggy cup and all of that, but if there's no health restrictions on that, then you could put whatever it is that you wanted that, and you could poison people and you could do all of that. And so there's good and bad in it. I agree that the ease of doing business can be really better, but we do need some sort of regulations in place so that men don't take advantage of other people.
Yeah,
and that's
young,
really right.
A young
really
man's spirit can be broken by all this bureaucracy and red tape.
Yeah, and
but
young man
we've only scratched the surface.
I know. We get this, we
Dr. Fernanda.
Next week.
Whenever you're available. Dr. Fernanda, what are your closing remarks and what would you like to conclude with?
Well, I want to say something that I've said earlier, that time is your major resource, and it's limited. It is finite. So marshal yourself around understanding that the wealth you need is to manage your time, take the best advantage of your time, and for that you need to build resources based on character, discipline, knowledge, skills, relationships, these sort of things. And if you can take care of these things, life tends to take care of you better, as opposed to getting zeroed in on the concept that the only thing that matters is making money and then I'm good. That's not true. That adage is really not real as much as we think it is.
Well, I would say if your purpose in life is making money and wealth, you'll never find happiness.
Nope.
What are your concluding
statements? My concluding is just amen to what Dr. Fernanda said.
Okay. Right? Have a good and safe week, Bahamas. And I would like to herald with Dr. Francis that nurses are truly unsung heroes in our society, and please let's give them their just due for all they've done for our society. Our medical system, Princess Margaret Hospital, the government clinics are only holding together and barely holding together because of the dedication of our nurses. Good night.
Amen.
He'll help you solve your problems on 96.9.